Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Chad Sheridan, the USDA Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. Chad, it's been a while, but welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jason. It's great to be on the show.
It's been more than 3 years since you're on the show, which is, I'll take the blame for this one. I probably should have asked you sooner, but I'm glad you're back. And at the time when we spoke back in 2012, 2011 timeframe, there were several priorities at the time. You said, this is what I'm going to go down the path of. So let's play catch up a little bit. Let's see how you're doing. The first one is the big data challenge. You talked about modernizing your back-end accounting system. Give me the status of that effort.
Last time we talked, I was about 4 months into the job, and I may have been a little too optimistic about how stable our re-engineered systems were. We introduced a new set of systems in 2010, and what we found after we had talked in 2011 was the stability of our systems was not what we thought it was. So it took us another good year to finalize and fix our policy acceptance systems, our actuarial systems, to the point where, you know, we could accept our policy information, to where we didn't have hundreds of change request backlogs, that some of which were more than a year old. It took a good, strong effort. And in fact, what ended up happening was that work started to bootstrap our effort into agile development. We finally started to make hay when we dedicated a team to the effort. We had them sit down with the business unit leader weekly, if not more, to prioritize which change requests needed to be done, and we kept all the other work out of their way. So when we finally did that, that kind of gave us a leg up into, well, maybe this kind of process will work for us.
It's interesting you talk about the bootstrap your way to Agile. I'm sure we'll talk about that later on in the program. But when you talk about the policy acceptance, the actuary systems, those are terms of art, I think, for a risk management agency versus financial system, typical general ledger. Just give me a sense of what you mean by policy acceptance and actuary systems.
So the way the risk management agency works is we develop all of the policies, the rates, the actuaries, the prices associated with the policies of crop insurance that will be sold. We dictate loss adjustment standards, how you're going to sell and service the policies. Then we turn around and work with, I believe now, 20 companies that actually sell and service the policy. So RMA does nothing to actually directly sell and service. We partner with industry to do that. Every policy that industry sells, they then submit the information on that policy to us for acceptance, for reinsurance purposes. So our policy acceptance system does business rule edits on that information to validate that, in fact, the information associated with that policy is valid. We look for making sure that the policyholder is not debarred or the policyholder is still alive. We look to make sure that the calculated premium, when the acreage is reported, is correct. When an indemnity comes in, is it correct in matching our handbooks and policy associated with the insurance policy? So it's many hundreds of business rule edits for different policies. So our actuarial systems are actually those systems that we publish the information to the public and to the companies. We have a set of 4, 5, 6 applications that take us through the effort to rate, price, and then ultimately approve and publish the actuarial information associated with the policy. We do 4 or 5 filings each year that time with each sales closing date for individual policies.
All right, very interesting. Good explanation, because, again, this is not something that I think most agencies deal with. Talk a little bit about what the status of that back-end accounting system, and have you modernized it yet? Are you working through a new system yet?
We're working on it right now. We actually have delivered the first piece of that system, our escrow system. So every company is given the option to establish an escrow account to support timely payment. So what they'll do is establish an escrow account from which they will then pay within 3 days of submitting a claim to us from a producer, and then we'll turn around and fund the escrow within 3 days of validating and receiving that. So this is actually very exciting, because our escrow system is built on a business process management platform, Appian, and we built this platform in the cloud. It was our first platform as a service cloud implementation. It was a huge part of our effort to build our agile development process, because Appian is a very mature agile development company that actually developed their software agilely. They came in, we brought in some of their folks and their partners to actually do the software development with our prime contractor. And we went through a couple of iterations and delivered something that well exceeded everybody's expectations for a lower price than we expected it to do and faster than we expected to do it. It was not the first one we started, but it was the first one we finished in the financial systems.
So what comes next? Are you looking, 6 months from now, 8 months from now, to continue that iterative development?
The one system we're looking to field in the next couple of months is our ineligible tracking system. That has been undergoing for probably a year and a half or more. We had to refactor our design efforts and kind of converted that project into an agile development one about halfway through. We found that we had started the project and our technical approach was flawed. So we refactored, restarted, brought in the right development team and said, we're going to finish this job in an agile manner. Our first production release is scheduled for May. And we'll have a little bit of follow-up after that, but we'll have that done this summer. We're just about to start the first project in re-engineering what we call the reinsurance accounting systems. So these are the systems that reconcile, provide reports. We do monthly reconciliations with the companies on premium that they owe us, making sure that what we've settled on a regular daily basis with escrow is accurate to all of the indemnities we've received. We also settle up on a yearly basis. These systems feed our general ledger through the financial management systems at USDA. So there's a whole host of capabilities. We're kicking off the first project of those probably in the next 2-3 weeks.
Let's go down the path a little bit on Agile. You mentioned it a couple times as you talked about the changes to these systems. Did you end up having to bring in outside help to get to Agile? Did you end up doing training? Was it a combination of things?
We did all of the above. Our journey to our version of Agile, which my team has named RM Agile, it's a nice little logo. We started probably in the 2012 timeframe. I think one of the mistakes I made in coming here from an acquisition experience in DOD was, I knew how to manage these big ship projects, and you take control, you work the plan, you plan it out. And so the thought was, well, we just need to gain control. We need to get control of our requirements. We need to plan the job and then work the plan. So what we found was we spent 4 to 6 months planning a 4 to 6 month job. And if you look at the business cycle of technology, it's a 12 to 18 month refresh cycle. Moore's Law is still alive and well, whether it be the compute power or just the change in the software. If you look at our business cycle in crop insurance, at best, that's a yearly cycle. So I'm now spending 25% to a third of my business cycles planning a job. Well, that failed utterly. It was the wrong approach. So we stepped back, we licked our wounds and said, hey, let's go after iterative development. And we started a little bit ways down the path and said, we had another problem with iterative development where we were not getting the business users engaged in our development. And one of the biggest complaints I kept hearing was, well, we tell you what we need. You guys go away into a corner, into a dark hole for weeks and months, and then you come back with something and it doesn't meet our needs. So we said, okay, we can do better. And so we started into our agile development. We brought in some trainers, both at our prime contractor, and we trained some of our people up. But I think we missed the boat a little bit because we didn't rethink our project management processes. So we were still trying to plan this big upfront planning effort and then execute in an agile manner. And my applications lead has one of my favorite terms, where he calls it buff agile, big upfront agile. It doesn't work. Over the course of 2012 into 2013 and finally into the spring and the summer of last year, I think we found about every way to bump our head imaginable. The fortunate thing was we kept bumping our head in a different manner, so we didn't end up looking like a unicorn. We just had a bunch of lumps on our head. We found things like we were trying to adhere so strongly to a baseline. Well, agile is supposed to be fluid, and so there was fear around the baseline changed. Well, we can't change the baseline. You're supposed to change the baseline. It's agile. So we hadn't changed all of our processes to match our execution. We are having huge problems with, we'd get done with development and we'd be ready to deploy to test and production. We didn't have, there was one project we didn't have the environments to deploy to. So we had to bring in what we called a DevOps concept to involve the operational community. We actually call it DevOpsSec because we think if you don't get these security folks involved up front. So now we've built a process that we're supposed to have those environments done before we even start coding. And it's made a big difference. We're trying to work towards more continuous testing, automated delivery. We're slowly moving along that pendulum. So I think by the time we got to, say, the summer of last year, things started to click. We started to get some product owners that had been through one of these before, knew their role. So I think we struggled with the roles and responsibilities. In fact, when we trained, this is funny, we trained everybody as Scrum Masters. Well, you don't train product owners as Scrum Masters. That's not their role. So you've got a business community that has historically been very involved in design, probably more than they needed to be. So we did a lot of dictating of design instead of letting the team, you tell us what your requirements and processes are, and we'll build the system to meet your needs. So then I combined that with training them as Scrum Masters, and now they think they're in charge of the development effort. And so we had to refactor that, and now we train everybody as a product owner, so we represent the role. I think we had people that were also uncomfortable with the level of decision making at that, you know, at a lower level. So you'd have product owners that are sitting in a stand-up meeting. They're supposed to be making priority decisions about what work they're going to do, and they want to go run back to the boss and get them on their May-I. And almost every new product owner, it took 2, 3, 4 sprints before they were comfortable, and they could see that the boss was going to endorse them making those decisions. It's very powerful, but if you've never done that before, the fear is, well, I'm not allowed to make this decision. Well, yes, you are. So I think when we got to the summer of last year, we started to click. And now, over the last 9 months, it's been exciting. We've got about 10 to 12 active development projects going on at a time, some of which we've done scaled agile, where we've taken 4 Scrum teams on one project. That was a wild ride. But it can work. Compared to maybe we had 2 or 3 development efforts going when you and I talked last, and it was probably that way for another year or two, without a huge increase in budget. So we're doing a lot more work and delivering a lot faster. Our on-time, on-function delivery is that, you know, that magic 80%+ on-time, on-function. And when we do change, it's usually because of a business need. So it's made a huge difference in our relationship with our business folks, because they now believe and trust that when we say we're going to get something done, we get it done. And it allows us to then transition to maybe moving higher up that food chain of value because people are confident that we can deliver.
That's a tremendous story, and I want to continue down this path, but we're going to take a quick break. And we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Agile, and then we're going to talk more about an older priority at the time about business needs and IT. My guest today is Chad Sheridan, the Agriculture Department's Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and my guest today is Chad Sheridan, the Agriculture Department's Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. Now, Chad, before break, we're talking a lot about some older priorities, but we got into the Agile discussion because several times during the conversation, you brought up Agile and how it's moving and implementing these older priorities really helped you move into Agile more quickly. One thing I've heard about Agile, one challenge, is this idea of rebaselining, and you brought that up, that sometimes you have to rebaseline, but that also gets you in trouble, quote-unquote, with your department heads or even OMB or Congress, because they hear rebaseline, they automatically think, well, what did you do wrong? So give me a sense of when you talk about rebaselining, what are you referring to?
Well, we're talking about individual projects. So when we look at, we have one major business investment that's a mixed life cycle investment, still has both steady state and development modernization and enhancement efforts in it. And in our major in business investment, the way we show our baseline is we project for current budget year and future budget years that we intend to continue to modernize systems in this investment and show we think we're going to spend about this much, and these are the kinds of things we expect to do. And the way we show that in our master schedule is usually a set of planning packages associated with our four application groups within the investment. As we get to a year of execution, what we'll do is once we have attained our investment board's approval to start a project, we have a certain threshold below which I can approve, above a certain threshold the board approves, we will raise up that project into our IMS, we'll report it to the department, and it's a program baseline change request. It's not an investment change request, but we go through the exercise with the department in full transparency. So we start that project. The way we're doing Agile, my investment board gives us up to 100% reserve that we would take out of a reserve amount that's shown in our investment for every project. So what that means is at the start of a project, I've got baseline plus 100%. At the 25% review for every project, that shrinks to baseline plus 50. At this 50% review, it's baseline plus 20. At the 75% review, it's baseline plus 10. So I turn that money back into the reserve at all of those 3 points during the project. We sometimes see baseline change requests in between the reviews, but most often it's my prime contractor leads the review at 25%, my project manager leads the review at 50%, and again, the prime leads the review at the 75%. And what we see, sometimes we have baseline change requests that are no cost but schedule. One that comes to mind, our ineligible tracking system project was originally slated to go into production in March, right around a huge business cycle. We have a sales close date on March 15th. Huge amount of work for both the companies who sell insurance and us, and we were targeted to deliver the system then. Everybody screamed and said, no, we can't do it that way. Let's extend this out another month and a half at no additional cost so that we get the right testing and we come in at a downtime in our business cycle. So those are the kinds of things we do, and we found that by taking that approach, it takes the fear out of the project management in an Agile environment, because the truth of the matter is we failed by spending 4 months planning 4 month jobs. That was not going to work. So now between concept and discovery, so concept is we get an idea of what we're going to do, put a t-shirt size to how big we think that project's going to be. Then we say, hey, we think we want to do this. So we enter into discovery. That's a 3 to 4 week process. And what you do in discovery is you develop your rough order of magnitude estimate. Come up with the epics, the big user stories around that, and probably enough idea around the architecture and maybe that first sprint's worth of work that you're going to do in the backlog. We'll make an investment project decision after discovery. So you're talking 3, 4, 5 weeks of work and a rough order of magnitude estimate. There's no way you can hold plus or minus 10% on that point. It's ludicrous. We get that investment approval. We have that reserve. Then we go into ramp up, which is really an architectural view. We try to build out our environments and ramp up. We spend maybe 2-3 weeks in ramp up, and then we actually start sprinting. And we generally do 2 week sprints for the length of the project, delivering usable code for testing at every sprint. That's the key. And so our user acceptance testers can test. And depending on the project need, we might have a series of releases. For example, our agent locator application, we released first our external version, and now we're finishing up the internal version. The external version had less information, didn't have PII. We have a little bit more needs internal to RMA, and so we, again, two releases, so we can see what it looks like in the public version while we're still working on what we need for our internal use.
Is it something that you've done to work with either your chief financial officer side or your headquarters CIO to help them understand that change is okay, change is important because it means we're heading down the right path? If we don't change, failure is worse than change.
We had to show that it worked. I think we had to show that if you let go a little bit of control and you're not so tightly trying to control the requirements in the baseline, and you let the people that are most knowledgeable about the work, the product owners that are the key users, the development team, if you let them do their jobs and you give them this is what we're looking for in a big picture, this is the box that you're allowed to operate in, and then The management team does their job to remove the friction. What we have found is by letting go, we end up doing more projects for the same amount of money. Our on-time, on-function delivery is greatly improved. And so the way I explained the reserve methodology to our investment board was it's an opportunity cost. I'm willing to put an opportunity cost on every project I start that I could potentially use twice of its baseline. But we all know we're going to release those funds as we go through. And what we found is the majority of our projects do not see any major hiccups. Sometimes we do. We figure out through ramp up or the early parts of the sprints that, oh man, our approach to the technical method for this project was nuts. I don't know what we were thinking. But by having an agile approach, by having that reserve, that discussion is no longer full of fear, right? We want to fail fast. We want to find out the big rocks. We want to tackle that big risk first so that by the time we figure it out, we haven't spent 90% of the dollars. And now we're saying, well, I've spent 90%. Give me another 100% to go do this. We fail fast. And we know early on when something's not exactly the way we thought it was. And it used to be we had project managers that were afraid to tell the truth because the sin of breaching a baseline was so egregious that people would hide and were afraid to tell the truth. I think with an agile approach in this methodology, it encourages transparency and encourages the truth. And we disclose to the department all of this. So our capital planning reviews see every month as we go through and update our IMS, they see what we're doing. If they want to know and ask questions, we're happy to do that. And in fact, I think we're still due to give them another brief on our system development lifecycle. And every week I get a set of project status reports that I send to our executive management team, our investment review board, with a few notes. They see everything. My application development lead sends them out to the directors. So every week there's a drumbeat of information. There's no hiding. There's nothing there. We expect full transparency on a weekly basis.
When we spoke 3.5-4 years ago, one of your goals at the time was to bring the business needs of the RMA closer to the IT needs. And through Agile, that sounds like what you're exactly doing. But give me a sense, how do you do it at the next level down? Because as you said earlier, one of the mistakes you made was you thought you had business involvement, but you really didn't.
The first thing that we got was the success and execution we've gotten with Agile has and among other things, has given us a seat at the table. They now believe when we say we're going to do something, we do it. And so the next step in our process is to build on that success and move ourselves up the value chain to where, doing things right today. Now what do we do to make sure we're doing the right thing? So it's a matter of myself and my architecture team, my management team, working with the business directors, working with our executive leadership to take the priorities we see, especially things like what's coming out of the Farm Bill, where we'd like to see ourselves in 2018, 2017, when the next Farm Bill starts to be written. What are those big rocks we want to go after? What do we want crop insurance to look like? And there's a strong belief by all of our executives that we don't do anything without IT. I think that's kind of the truth in most of industry, but in insurance, a financial services type organization that we are, I think that sector of the industry, even in government, has realized earlier that nothing happens without IT. And so I was just out in Kansas City with my team and with one of our key business execs, and we got to talking, and he's like, yeah, there's nothing we do without IT. So we partner and look at, here's what I think I'm hearing your priorities are. How can we help?
Let me jump in. Do you have, for instance, one of your mission owners sitting with your developers?
So instead of that conversation happening between a developer and a product owner, we have that conversation with more of a business relationship manager and a supervisor, director, or a team of folks in a business area. We're looking to manage our portfolio by a series of demand channels. So for example, each of my business lines is a demand channel. So I've got a dedicated business relationship manager, or will have a dedicated business relationship manager as I finish hiring all of them, for each of our, you know, we've got three deputy administrators, so each one of them is a business line. My office is a business line because all of those things you have to do to keep the infrastructure up to date, all of those kinds of things, life cycle replacement, all of those things. So that's a demand channel. Our office of the administrator is a demand channel that includes our public affairs organization, our chief financial officer. So we look at our five plus demand channels, and it's up to the business relationship manager and the business lead to work to prioritize the types of projects or types of capabilities they want to do in their area. What we're trying to do is enhance our governance, so we're having a conversation of how much non-recurring work do we need in each one of these demand channels that best satisfies our overarching RMA business goals. We're not quite there yet, but I think it's going to be very powerful as we start to look to future budgets and say, not only do I have a top-down view from strategy and priorities, but I've got a bottoms-up view of what's capable, because we used to call it our sack of projects. Now we call it our set of concepts. So we do a lot of work with the business community to at least identify, well, this is a concept of what you want to do. We do what we call t-shirt sizing. Well, we think that's an extra large. That's greater than $500,000. That's a medium. That's 250. So at least we have a set of what we think it's going to take. So we combine that bottoms-up view and a top-down strategy view, and now our budgets are being built on real facts and not just a top-down view. So I think as we go into the 2017 budget, the 2018 budget, I feel a lot more confidence that when we say this is how much development is out of our budget, we're going to be there. And in fact, I might say I want to plan for even more than that. And, you know, if the money doesn't come, then we'll lop the lowest priority projects off of it.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back, and then we'll get into your new priorities. My guest today is Chad Sheridan, the Agriculture Department's Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Chad Sheridan, the Agriculture Department's Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. Chad, we spent the first half of the show talking about older priorities, though we did jump into Agile as kind of a newer one. Let's jump into those new priorities. And the first one I'm going to start with is shared services, a big push across USDA to have you guys work more closely together, whether it's networks or email. Give me a sense of how RMA is looking at shared services and trying to take advantage of them.
Well, today we already consume several shared services. Obviously, the department-wide email, cloud email service, that was the first cloud email service in the Microsoft cloud. We're all participating in that. It's working very well. It's great to have the whole department in one global system. Similar to what I saw with the Navy with NMCI. So I think it works very well for what we need. We've also got a shared Active Directory. We were one of the first, not quite the first, to migrate all our user community to that Active Directory. And now we're looking on at how does it get better? How do we get more of our objects into Active Directory? We do use a shared service for telephony. We've been doing that for a while. We got rid of all our fax machines, which is not a huge investment, but just the idea that I don't have to buy fax paper or toner or anything. We use the department's electronic fax service. We're a really small player there. We've looked at other opportunities. I think it's a balance for a small agency such as us that has a very big book of business. We need to be very careful because at times a shared service can get lost in the shuffle. So you look at the shared services. If there's 120,000 user community in USDA approximately, I've only got 450 feds here. And so one of the things that our team is kind of nuts about is this white glove service. We believe in going that extra mile to take care of our people. So for example, when a new employee shows up, there's a computer on their desk. All they have to do is set up a new password and they're ready to go. We believe everybody should work the first day they're here. And that really translates through all of our interactions. So one of my concerns with shared services is, do we lose that personal touch when now I'm 400 out of 120,000? It hasn't been a huge problem, but I think where shared services need to go and get better is the service provider's attitude needs to be more like a company that's providing a service. So You know, we're here, we have strong service level agreements, we've got clear interactions, and that's, shared services are only going to get better when we focus on the service and not about this idea of saving money. I'm not sure you save as much money as everybody thought we would when the push for shared services comes. So I think if we push on the service more than the funds, you'll get more adoption, more excitement, and maybe we start competing some things. I love the idea of digital services because you start to get a marketplace of things where now I can choose, well, this guy does this over here in the Forest Service. Maybe I want to get some of that. Or I'm happy to say that we're looking at maybe providing some shared services in agile development. So if you come to me with a business product owner and a set of ideas, I give you an agile team and a project manager to go deliver to your needs. We've got a, hopefully I think we might have our first customer on that. So as we mature our staff to be ready to do these kinds of things, I'm hopeful, you know, maybe we do 2, 3, 4 of these a year. I think the structure we've got with my team and the prime contractor can absorb more developers. The thing I've got to get more mature on is, do I have my Fed staff ready to do that legwork for interagency agreements and figure out chargeback models and such? So we're talking with other providers within USDA and elsewhere to see how we can become that. That's where I see shared services going. That's really exciting, is now we can pick. It's not always a thou shalt.
I've talked to several CIOs over the last year or so in a very similar situation as you. They're a smallish agency in a larger department. And sometimes they say, I just want to get out of the IT business. I just want to stop with the commodity IT. If I could get that off my plate and really focus on the mission, that'd be close to nirvana as we'll get for IT. You don't seem to be sounding that exact same thing. Every agency is a little different. Do you feel like, from your perspective as CIO, there's some control you do still need from the commodity IT side?
There's some control because we're so over the top on what we believe service ought to be. So if I could find somebody to do my end user services or continue to do my telephony that gives us the level of service we need, then I'm all for getting out of the business. I'm all for the idea of love cloud first. I would love to get out of the data center business. But it's got to be to a level of service that we've come to expect. The thing that I love about being a missionary, a CIO, is that focus on mission. And so there's always a natural conflict a little bit between department-level CIO and OMB and the federal CIO and the folks that are actually delivering mission capabilities. It's the same conflict you saw in the military between staff officers and line officers. Well, I fall way into the camp of the line officers. I think I wouldn't be happy unless I'm delivering something for a mission. And so that's where the voice of the bureau level CIO, I think, is extremely important as we look at shared services or OMB direction or federal CIO directions. Don't forget about the mission. What we've been very, very fortunate here in the last 2+ years in USDA, and it had a lot to do with a lot of heavy lifting by a good group of bureau CIOs, but also the environment that our outgoing CIO, Cheryl Cook, gave us, one of collaboration. We've established a very strong action-oriented CIO council that has leadership from the department level as well as elected leadership from the bureau or agency level CIOs. So if you look at the officers on our CIO council, by default in the charter, we all voted to approve. The USDA CIO is the chair. One of her deputies is a ex officio director. So that's two of the officers. We then have a vice chair, a secretary, and 4 more directors that are elected. And there can be part of the voting members that are department, but generally have been bureau level CIOs. I'm currently the vice chair of the CIO council. So working together, you know, we've looked at collaborating to develop better policy for cloud. We looked at collaborating to develop policy around our enterprise initiatives, whether they be mandated enterprise initiatives or optional enterprise initiatives. So we think that effort on what is it the enterprise should be working on is a great part of what we do in a council. We still have our fits and starts. Sometimes we talk past each other. But for the most part, you know, we work out our differences. In fact, we had a meeting in November on cloud policy and enterprise initiatives where we went offsite, we hashed it out, and the policy that came out of that was far superior to anything any one of us could have done.
Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up the show with looking forward. My guest today is Chad Sheridan, the USDA's Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Chad Sheridan, the Agricultural Department's Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. Chad, we talked about some new priorities. Shared services is one. Let's jump into some other things. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
Well, a couple of things. One, we talked a little bit earlier about our financial systems. I would love to finish the job. And by the end of this current option year on our contract, finish up the work on re-engineering our financial systems. We may not get there. I'm confident we're going to get there early in 2016, calendar year 2016. So I definitely want to knock that off. We've got a continuing slate of program initiatives around the Farm Bill. We've done an incredible job across the agency of doing more than people thought we would be able to do in implementing Farm Bill initiatives. I think we did better than even we thought we were going to do. I remember back in October, we did not think we were going to implement the yield exclusion. And I was off at a conference. I had a conversation with one of our business leads that said, are you really sure you can do it? And looking back at all of the Farm Bill things we did through the systems, most of the work's done up front by our business folks, but everything falls and flows through the IT systems. We had been so successful in implementing every change into our systems. I said, we got this. We're going to do it. And so in the next couple of weeks, we went out and we were getting a lot of pressure from the Hill about why can't you get this done? And we got it done. And I'm really excited about our continuing ability to deliver to capabilities. So for some of the new programs we've implemented, we've got to expand them to new crops. So we've got a very busy business slate of things we need to keep doing. On the IT front, I foresee some additional work in analytics and getting control of our data. We've had a wonderful relationship with Tarleton University in Texas, Tarleton State University in Texas, for our data mining efforts. I want to take advantage and get more usage out of our data mining efforts and then maybe bring some more of that in our core systems. The marketplace of analytics has been tremendous in its growth over the last 10 years. I'd like to see us harvest some of that to get additional eyeballs on potential problems with waste, fraud, and abuse. So if you look at the compendium of our approach to managing program integrity, we invest a lot into our initial acceptance and business rule validation for all policies that come in. We've got a semi-nascent effort in analytics that we've certainly had for 10 years in our data mining thing, but it only covers a little bit of our space. And then we've got our investigative team. And then what I give them is a case management tool. But if you're looking in a year or so beyond a reinsurance year and you're going into case management, if it's a fraud case, you work with the assistant district attorneys, that's expensive. I think the more we invest in analytics, we can put eyeballs on potential issues in the year of execution, pick up the phone, call the company and say, hey, these policies in this area look anomalous. Could you go take a look? You know, and that's, you know, I think the deterrent factor of knowing that we can see and look at things that don't quite make sense. We've already seen that happen with our spot checklists we get out of our data mining application. We've expanding that. That's an exciting place for our employees to be and an exciting place for us to continue to drive down. I think in a business area, we're looking at revamping our improper payments approach. And so my team is standing by to support our compliance office in anything they need from an IT standpoint as they go through that business process reengineering. We've been asked to help other business areas with their business process modeling. We showed with our Appian development in escrow that we've got a good group of people that can model business processes. So it's exciting because our successes breed more and more desire. We're being asked to help with business processes. We're being asked to help our team improve their project management approach to new insurance products. It's non-traditional IT work, but because we've shown competence not only competence, in some cases excellence, in these business process efforts, we're being asked to come back to the table and help out some more.
Let me go back to the business analytics, the business intelligence. It's a huge area of opportunity and a huge challenge. You talked a little bit about a relationship you had around data mining. What type of tools are you looking at?
I don't have a great answer for that. I think the first thing we need to do is maybe flip the switch a little bit on our mindset and go from an agency that's thought of its data as transactional to an agency that thinks of its data as a strategic asset. So that takes some heavy lifting. So partnering between my team and our business data owners, our data stewards, let's think about how we govern our data, make decisions on that so that we can start to build out data marts, data warehouses. I'd like to democratize our data. There's a group of very smart people in our organization that know how to get the data out of our transactional systems and create reports, but there's only a small number of them. And they get crushed when we get questions from the Hill. They get crushed when we're asked to release data through FOIA requests. Maybe we can create a set of data that's aggregated at a proper level that doesn't violate privacy, and maybe we release that to data.gov. So instead of sending me a FOIA request, go look here. We're already doing a little bit of that with our summary of business application that we've revamped. We actually released the initial version of that. We shut down our legacy system, and now we're going through another project to bring additional layers, a lower level aggregation, and make that available to the public. So I think the more and more we look at this, the better we're going to become. But it's more of a business and IT data ownership issue before we start to think about the technologies and the tools.
Chad, sounds like we could talk for another hour, but unfortunately we are out of time, and I promise I'll have you come back on the show sooner than 3.5 or so years. My guests say Chad Sheridan, the Agricultural Department's Risk Management Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Chad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.